I'm Dr. Scott Lyons, and you're watching or listening to The Gently Used Human. Have you ever stopped to think, what really makes a relationship work? What's the secret sauce of relational success? How much of it is the way we talk and listen to each other? And how much of it is just chemistry? What makes or breaks our relationships? Today, we're diving into all of this and more with the superstar relationship coach, Jillian Turecki. Jillian has spent 20 years helping people transform their relationships, starting with how they relate to themselves. In this episode, we're focusing on what makes a healthy, strong relationship. Things like respect, trust, and feeling safe with each other. We'll talk about the real power of good communication and the importance of actually hearing each other and why setting boundaries is key. We also look at how breakups can be a chance for personal growth and get into the sometimes awkward first meeting with a partner's parent. All of that and more. Let's get this party started. Jillian, welcome to The Gently Used Human. For those of you who don't know Jillian, who is an amazing certified relationship coach, she's the podcast host of Jillian on Love, and just one of the most accessible, brilliant people out there talking about relationships, all aspects of relationships. And I, for one, am a huge fucking fan.
Thank you so much for that introduction and for the compliments, and the feeling is mutual. Thank you for having me here.
My pleasure. So Jillian, I want to start with a really easy question.
Okay.
What is a healthy relationship? Mm-hmm. Asking for a friend.
Okay. It's a very simple question. It's a very simple question, but it's not always easy. The way that I would define a healthy relationship is one in which two people respect and trust each other. Mm. And that's just like the core of it. The foundation of it is that they have a foundation that is constructed of safety, trust, and respect.
Mm. Is that something like people develop over time, or it should feel like there right away?
I think that trust and safety develops over time. I think that respect has to be there from day one. And if it's not, then you shouldn't actually be with that person.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Let's maybe operationalize respect. Is that like I admire what they do or their right. values, or like what is respect?
In good terms question. Of- Everyone assigns a different meaning to respect. Because some people will say, well, they were 5 minutes late, and I find that disrespectful. So I think that first and foremost, what it means is respecting the person for who they are, not for who they want them to be, not for who they may turn out to be, but really respecting the person and their journey and how they are and how they present themselves today. And I think that along with that, obviously there's respect also with just speaking to each other with respect, not speaking about the person in any sort of disrespect. I think that it also includes admiring the person and really respecting who they are and what they stand for, but it's also treating them with the respect that every human being deserves.
And we were talking about at one point some time ago, I was sharing with you, like, one of the things I really love about my partner is like the fact of how like I respect him so much. I'm like so in admiration of his brilliance and all these things. And we were talking about like, that's maybe not even a thing we were looking for when we were younger. It's like, how hot are they? Or like, you know, whatever other features.
How hot are they? And then how good do I feel when I'm with them, kind of thing, you know, which is important. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, how hot are they? And how attracted am I to them, basically?
Have you found that like as you've grown and developed as a human, like that your sense of what is attractive has changed?
Absolutely. I think it's as we mature emotionally, but it's also as we age. That's the thing with wisdom. You know, with wisdom, we've seen a thing or two about life, and we've seen a thing or two about relationships. And what happens is that our priorities shift, and we have a greater sense with wisdom about what's important versus what's not really important. And I think that with relationships, our priority shifts. Wisdom tells us that being with someone who accepts us entirely for who we are and vice versa is priceless, because there's a lot of people who won't accept us for who we are. And that someone who listens, that's priceless. Someone who is present with you, that's priceless. And then I think that also as we grow, we realize, wow, like this is sort of, I think people who really love to grow and learn and have that, if you will, growth mindset, really value the idea of being inspired by someone that they're dating to be a better person. And I think that that's something that is very, I think it's quite unique. And I don't, and I think it's kind of rare in many ways. And I think, again, something very important, because it means that to me, what's implied in that is that we really respect and admire the person's character. It's not just what they've achieved, although there could be admiration around that. But it's like, if you inspire me to be a better person, then you have a way about you. There's something to your character that is exceptional.
And there's a contagiousness about it. Like, mm-hmm. Ooh, that's like, it's percolating in my space now. And like, yeah. I feel like I want to do better, or I want to work harder, or I want to be more attentive to other people in the same way.
Exactly. That they are. Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, our priorities do change as we get older and as we mature, at least they should.
Yeah.
They should.
Can you talk me through your own personal evolution of what's changed?
Yeah. I mean, so in the past, so when I was much, much younger, like teens, 20s, let's say, it was basically like, do I think you're hot? Do I feel hot around you? And do we get along? Like, you know, do we have fun together? Is there like a rapport there? You know, I think that everyone is always looking for someone that they feel that they get along with. There's a vibe there. So that was basically my criteria. And then, you know, the criteria developed to, how do I feel when I'm around you? Do I feel good around you? Do I feel special? Do I feel cherished? Are you good around family? Are you a nice person? And then I think it evolved a step further, which is, are you willing to do the hard work? Are you going to shut down every time there's a problem, or are you going to actually communicate? And are you going to stick around when things get hard? And are you really going to accept everything about me? That doesn't mean that you tolerate me when I'm being a shit, but are you going to, as long as I'm not always a shit, are you going to love me even when it has nothing to do with you, but I'm going through a hard time? And like, are we going to be allies in life together? And I think that that's something that really changed. Like, I think that's something that I always, in theory, vaguely wanted, but for me personally, it's become as something that's really incredibly important to me, is that sort of that value system of, we're going to be each other's ride or die.
I really appreciate that. For me, it's become kind of full circle. Like, I think when I was younger, similar to you, it was like, are they hot? Maybe. That was, I would say that was actually a part of it. That actually came later. But first I was like, will they marry me? Will we build a life together? And this was like my teens,
wow,
like when I should not have been thinking this.
Yeah.
But I really, in reflection, recognized that that was more anxiety speaking. That was more about like, I need someone else to create my sense of security and safety.
Mm.
And the idea of entrapping them in marriage or in a long-term relationship, like, was more the idea to give me that sense of security and safety.
Right. That makes sense.
And so
sense.
I was looking... Yeah.
Yeah.
And then maybe later was like, are they hot? But not really too much time in that.
Yeah, that's good.
And then it was like, will they bring out my crazy?
Mm.
And if they do, I would date them.
Right. That was more of an unconscious thing, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
Although it definitely at a certain point, I was like, what is going on here? You and I have talked about this before.
Interesting, like, going on here.
Yeah,
like, you know, I got a pattern here.
Yeah, but the third person I dated who was addicted to meth, I think it might be me.
I think it might be the connection. It might just be me. That's the problem.
Yeah, and I think more recently, it's like I've really come into my own of like, oh, it's safe enough to ride the turbulence. Before, like for a lot of years, I was like, I am going to establish my boundaries. And if they do anything wrong, I'm going to break up with them to prove that I deserve better.
Yeah.
So it feels really good to actually have challenges and be like, oh, it's safe enough to work through them because I know we're both, as you say, like we're going to stay. And it's such a sexy quality.
It is such a sexy quality. And also this idea of like, first of all, we have to teach each other what our boundaries are. People don't enter a relationship with us knowing what our boundaries are. The onus is on us to communicate that and to actually give people, if they're worthwhile for you, if there's a strong connection and there's love there and appreciation there, to give people time also to adjust a little bit to a boundary. I mean, because a lot of our boundaries are conditioned. There are a lot of like, that's how you were raised in your family. You don't raise your voice when you're angry, but you could be in love with someone where like, it's a very different culture and everyone raised their voices when they were angry. That was just part of the deal. And so sometimes those two people will find each other in a relationship and they have to talk about that and how they can adjust.
Yeah, so true. I had a partner once and I said to him, like, why are you yelling at me? We're just having a conversation. He goes, I'm not yelling at you.
It's
I'm Latin.
And I was like, Latin.
Exactly
my point. Exactly my point.
Yeah. And you have to navigate. I love that you were saying like, you don't, like we shouldn't have the expectation that someone comes into relationship with us and knows all of our boundaries and should have the same boundaries.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how do we navigate the Venn diagram of where our boundaries cross and don't cross?
It's conversation. It's communication. I think that the Latin thing, the loud voice, I think that can be a harder thing to navigate, but it's all in the conversation. And you have to decide if it's a deal breaker for you or not. And I think that that's something that we all have to do going into a relationship is like, oh, these are our differences, which by the way, differences are very important because differences are what create attraction and they create electricity and they help us to stretch and to learn. But if there's like-
And texture.
And texture, exactly.
Yeah.
100%. But if they're if the differences are really large and very quote unquote triggering, you know, it's a conversation. It's also a conversation that we have with ourselves. Is this something that I can live with? You know, maybe it's like the person who's loud saying, I just want you to know that I'm getting loud right now, not because I'm angry, but just because I'm really, really excited or just feel really passionate about this right now. And then it could be that the other person could be like, okay, like they're letting me know that raising their voice is not an act of aggression. It's just literally who they are. And that might be something that they can actually adapt to. Maybe, maybe not. But we have to have the conversations about expectations, about boundaries, about needs. And it's not just one conversation. It's a continuous conversation that ebbs and flows throughout our relationship with someone. But the thing is, most people don't talk about these things at all. I haven't. I mean, in the past, I didn't.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. I mean, I was doing a podcast earlier and he was like, sleep takes work. Like sleep is an active process. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing is absolutely important to say about relationships is like relationships are active work consistently.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean work can't be fun or interesting or hard or revealing or vulnerable or any of those things, but it is work.
Yeah, I think that relationships require of us consistent awareness.
Mm.
Awareness of just the present moment, awareness of our partner's mood, aware of how we are. And it also sometimes it takes work for people to just lean into the ease of a moment. It's not about talking about the relationship all the time. And look, relationships are work. And it's not a but, it's an and. And if you're always talking about the relationship and always like having a problem, it might be time to reevaluate the relationship. It shouldn't be that there's always a problem.
No, no.
I mean,
but there are, yeah. Yeah. And that's an interesting discernment between like always a problem and navigating the friction and the textures of relationship.
Yes.
And
totally.
How might we help people like discern the difference between them? Like what's normalized and what's kind of like, uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, I think that like, if you're just not getting along, honestly, and this was a study done by the Gottmans, and it's been adopted and adapted many different ways. But the truth is, and anyone who's been in a relationship knows, like you really do have to have at least two times good experiences and good memories with someone. And if your memories, if your experiences with someone are negative and it's really outweighing the positive, or the positive are barely, you know, outweighing the negative, you got a problem. Like it really should be more positive than it is negative. It doesn't mean that you're not going to go through, in a long-term partnership, you will go through seasons and you will go through hard times. And I think that that's really, as long as the respect remains between two people, that's when you really, your commitment to someone is really tested. But that being said, you know, it's just like, you know, about your book, it's like some people are always looking for drama. So those people are always starting a fight. They're always starting a fight. They're like, wait a second. Things have been too easy, too good. I don't trust it. And then their little inner saboteur comes out, their little dramatic little devil that lives inside of them. And they're like,
you see me.
Yeah, let's see if, exactly. Let's see if I can fuck shit up a little bit right now and see what happens. Yeah. But that's also because what's interesting is that sometimes we need, you know, I can't say what the percentage is, but we need just enough texture and friction to be reminded that we are in a relationship with an autonomous being. And that, and to be reminded of, like, you can't get too comfortable. Be comfortable, but don't be so comfortable that you start to take the other person or the relationship for granted. Just enough to know that, like, this person could walk out on you in any moment. Not the kind of, like, you want to feel safe in your relationship, but to know that, like, it's not so safe that you can continue to show up sabotaging and they're going to stick around.
The reality is humans are emergent. Mm-hmm. They are in constant flux and change, as is relationships. And if you're not in the game of change, you're not in the game of relationship.
Oh yeah, that's very, very true. I know it's funny because people are, you know, are always trying to change their partner, but they're trying to change their partner either from having a really big problem like addiction, so then it becomes a codependent situation, or they think they're not changing the way that I want them to change. Instead of appreciating, no, actually, this being is evolving all the time. Can you appreciate all the different versions? And look, there's going to be many marriages within one marriage, within one long-term relationship. You know, the hope is that you keep falling in love over and over again with someone, and not everyone. So it takes resilience and it takes grit to make a relationship strong and last for a very long time.
So well said. Did you ever read the book, If the Buddha Married?
No, but should I?
Oh, I loved it. So for me, it was my first book. Because look, if you grew up in a family like most of us did, where what was modeled was funky.
Yeah.
Funky boundaries, unexpressed needs, shitty expression of emotions, terrible communication. Humans, gently used humans trying to sort it out without as much support systems. That was before they had access to Instagram and Jillian and many other folks who could make a difference.
Yeah.
And so that's what was modeled in my family, not just with my parents, but like in the family system. And when I started bumping up against things in relationships, I was like, that's the first mirror. That is our first hardcore punch in the face mirror of that shit that was modeled for you and internalized may not be healthy. And so I read this book and I was like, oh my gosh, that's what a healthy relationship looks like. Or that's the idea, like this idea that, you know, there'll be many incarnations of the same relationship within the same relationship. How do you keep falling in love with the evolving person you're with as you evolve together? And I was like, what? I mean,
that is the big challenge in long-term relationship. Absolutely. Because you're either growing together or you're growing apart. So how do you stay connected through the, not only the vicissitudes of life, but through the different skins that each one of you are going to shed and wear?
So well said. Yeah. I mean, when you just said that, it gave me shivers. It's so true.
That's really the work.
Yeah. And there's such moments of fear. It's like, I imagine holding hands with someone as I walk through life with them. And there are moments when the grip lessens because they're in their own process or change, or even moments where it's maybe all that's available is like fingers touching or just walking side by side.
Yeah. Very good metaphor. And it makes people feel very, very anxious. And I think that it's about, can you even stay connected through that? And can you allow for people to have their process? But it's still important, even as someone goes through the process, that couples really do their best to stay connected.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if there isn't the same sense of like, okay, we might not be able to hold hands right now, but are we still sharing this moment or this movement forward together? Are we still sharing this walk or shared interest in that walk?
Yeah.
Like that's essential.
Very well said. Totally essential. And are we ultimately walking in the direction of a shared vision?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because that's, if it's not, I don't think there's much, like, how could you possibly evolve together if there's not a sense of where you're evolving to?
Yes.
The shared vision of evolution.
100%. 100%. Very important.
So important.
And just to say, that's one of the things that has changed, that has to change for people and has changed for me, is like, yes, it's the emotion. It's the heightened emotion. It's how do I feel about life and about myself when I'm around this person? But also the more practical things to ask, like, When you're interested in long-term partnership, one does actually have to ask themselves important questions, and they have to consider different things about a potential partner that if they weren't really thinking long-term, wouldn't have to listen. And that is like, are our goals aligned? Do we have similar values? Like, do we see ourselves, like, how do we see the next 10, 20, 30 years of our life? And is it similar? Is it aligned? And these are the things, these are the really important questions and really important conversations that two people, I believe, must have with each other if they're going to consider getting married or any sort of comparable type of commitment.
I want to take a moment to give a loud shout out to The Embody Lab, which is one of the most incredible resources for body-based and somatic therapies. This show is all about healing, and The Embody Lab does exactly that. Whether you're on your own journey of transformation and discovery, or enhancing your skill sets in your career as like a coach or a therapist, a body worker, or really any career where you are supporting other gently used humans, the Embody Lab is your place for deep, inspiring, and impactful workshops, certificates, masterclasses, and an incredible community of like-minded folks. I love the Embody Lab, and so do so many other people that call it a platform to come home to over and over again. The Embody Lab is giving my listeners an exclusive offer, a one-time 10% off code to enhance your embodied well-being. All you have to do is go to theembodylab.com and use the code GENTLYUSED10 at checkout. And there's a nuanced like tension that I want to talk about in this. It's because it's like at the same time of like, how do you be present with someone and who they are now and not be pedestaling them or projecting about their potential in the future of like, they could be a really excellent partner if I just stayed. And I envision them as this. But so this nuance of going, how do I stay in the present, but actually also see if we're aligned in the future together?
Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, you know, never fall in love with potential. Everything that we're talking about is so filled with paradox. It's like on the one hand, you have to get comfortable with the fact that we're always evolving. On the other hand, you have to fall in love with someone as though they would never change. And that's particularly if your pattern is, well, they'll be good one day, or they'll change one day, or a lot of people think, and it's unconscious, but a lot of people's pattern is, I can change them. And that's a slippery slope.
Such a slippery slope.
Not a good one. Very slippery.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's another paradox is, is you will change them by being present in yourself and like true to your values. Like, again, change is inevitable.
Yes.
But if you are trying to manufacture the change and force it and pushing them into a certain shape, like molding them, that's not the type of change that's going to be sustainable.
Correct. And the reality is that anyone's evolution other than your own is none of your business.
Oh, put that on a fucking t-shirt. Oh, that's some merch right there. It's true. Oh, I mean, I'm just sitting with that and going, ooh, I believe that. And I can feel the toughness of actualizing that in my own body. Of like, no, I want to fight that.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something in me wants to fight that.
We want to fight that. Exactly. Big time. But it's none of our business.
It's none of our business. Relationships would be hard enough. Just fundamentally, two people coming together, or maybe even more than two people coming together, if that's the dynamic of the relationship. But like at least two people coming together is hard enough. Of like two different realities and perceptions colliding is hard enough, let alone all the wild different survival strategies that we infuse into this to either fuck it up more or try to get something or like not be able to navigate our own reflexive fears and such. So I'm like, your job, Jillian, is fucking hard. I just want to say that.
It is. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, as you know. Yeah, it's a lot of work.
It's so much work. How do you... Okay, so there's the basics of like, these are like some tenets of how relationships could be better and thriving, like better communication tips. Maybe we can start there and then we'll work our way down to more of the nitty gritty of the underlying survival patterns.
Sure. Okay, so wait, where should we start? Communication tips?
Let's start with communication. Like the things that just... Let's say everything is like too... people who've done their work on their own. So now it's like just the tension of people coming together, which is like...
Talk about boundaries and expectations like from day one, basically.
Day one.
Well, I mean, I think that when you're...
I'm just imagining a date, like our first date, and we're just saying like, here are my boundaries.
Let me be more specific. The first date is about building rapport. It's about observing the little things, how they speak to a waiter, how they respond to you, how you feel when you're around them, and seeing if there's chemistry there, not just physical, but intellectual and all of it. So it's really about relaxing on the first date. I do think, though, that in the dating world, like people are way too comfortable getting naked with each other and yet not comfortable having conversations with each other. And that leads to a lot of pain. And I think that specifically for people who repeatedly find themselves ghosted or rejected or hurt, or they've been with people who haven't respected their bodies or respected them, I think it really behooves them to wait. You know, not everyone assigns the same meaning to sex. And certainly men and women, generally speaking, not all obviously, but the overwhelming majority assign a different meaning to sex. There's different hormones released for women than there are men when it comes to sex. But either way, like, if you don't want a casual hookup, then don't present yourself as someone who would have a casual hookup. You have to say something like, yeah, you know, I'm at a stage in my life where I don't want to have sex with a stranger, you know, and you're a stranger to me. I want to get to know you. And I want us to have an emotional connection. I want us to be exclusive, whatever it is that you want, say it. And I think that, so that's one thing. The other thing about communication is that something that I've been reflecting on a lot lately is that people who, even family members who live under the same roof or maybe even married, so many of us are strangers to each other. And part of that is that we do, every single human being has a very complex, to use your language, textured inner world. And it is very foolish for someone to think that they know someone else like the back of their hand. You really don't. And the thing is, we take each other for granted all the time. And I think a large part of communication is making it so that we feel seen and understood. Because to feel safe in a relationship is to feel seen and understood. Anyone who doesn't feel seen or anyone who feels chronically misunderstood doesn't feel safe. So I think it's communication is about fostering that safety between two people. So that's just also like, tell me about your day. Tell me about the last time you stayed up all night. Tell me about that. Tell me about I wouldn't do this in the very beginning of a dating scenario, but when you're getting closer with someone, you can say, tell me about the most profound thing that's ever happened to you. I think that's a weird thing to ask someone very early on, because it's like, well, why would I tell you, a stranger, why would I open up like that to you? Like, that's too much to ask of someone. But you could ask them, tell me about the last time you were really, you know, impacted by a book or a movie. And then that person can open up and there can be a little bit of a share of vulnerability. I said this earlier in a podcast. I said, you know, one of the worst questions that you can ask someone is, tell me about yourself. It is such a lazy question. It's so bad. And it's so lazy. And it's like, okay, where the fuck do I begin? And why do I owe you to tell you? And it's lazy. It's literally lazy. So you just have to be much more specific. And so communication is, yes, the conversation about boundaries, needs, expectations, where everything is going, hard conversations. But communication also falls in the category of social skills. And most people don't have great social skills. And so it's about developing social skills of being more present, asking questions that inspire the person to tell you a story. And then you listen to the story, and then maybe you share a little bit about your story, and you both carry a conversation as though you were two improv actors on a stage trying to create some interesting tapestry from your interaction with one another. So communication is very layered. And not only that, communication is not just with our words. We're communicating all the time non-verbally. So communication is a huge umbrella, but I would start with that.
Yeah. When in doubt, share.
Yeah.
Say it. Just say it.
Just say it.
I mean, yes, there are, you know, scenarios where over-communication can happen, but in general, that's not the general populace.
No, it's not. The general populace is that people aren't talking enough about the things that they need to be talking about, and they're keeping things in, and they're growing resentful, and they're not building safety and trust. Like, if two people get together and they're like, our mission for this relationship is to create a rock solid foundation of safety and trust, let's talk about what we need to do to create that.
I'm just going to say, whoever's listening, I'm going to save you tens of thousands of dollars right now on couples therapy. Just ask a damn question.
Yeah.
And share. Share more than you think.
Yes.
Ask follow-up questions, and then ask follow-up questions to those questions.
And listen. and listen to the answers.
And reflect back what you're hearing.
Yes. Yeah. Oof. The listening is the really hard part for people.
That's funny. I find that people have the hardest time listening and then
what the worst is like when you meet someone, they ask you a question and then you start to share and they're not listening.
They're not listening.
To me, that is one of the worst things ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Where I've had these so many experiences where I'm sharing something, I think it's what they asked for.
Yes.
And then there's just no response.
Yeah, like you're opening and there's no nothing.
Nothing.
That's called a bad conversation. That's called a bad conversation.
Yes. And you're just like left in this empty vacuum of space that you just, you know, vulnerably shared into. And then it's like crickets.
That's usually because someone is awkward and doesn't have good social skills.
Yeah.
More times than not.
Yeah, there's just such a freeze. I mean, all the couples therapy I do, I'm just like, I promise you, everyone who's listening is like 95% of it is the freeze of communication.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
The repression of feelings.
Or communication problems. 1,000%. Yeah, 1,000%. Yeah.
It's wild to me. And then you're right. Like I'm working with a couple now where they're like, they have sex, but they don't talk about the sex. I'm like, when was the last time you said what makes you feel good? And he was like, oh, I could never say that. And I was like, well, how can you get naked with someone?
Yeah, when you can't say that. Yeah.
I mean, when you can't. It's like,
yeah. It's yeah. Very, sex is a big one. Sex, money, all of that.
Yeah.
Those two
sex,
things.
Sex, money.
Sex and money.
Hot topics.
Hot, really hot topics. And hard topics for couples to talk about.
Yeah. I think there's just a fear that like, if I say something wrong, or if I don't quite express myself correctly or the right way, then I might lose them.
Yes. Or I might hurt them.
Or I might hurt them. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to what you were talking about before is like, is there enough resilience that you might hurt them?
Yeah.
Or you might not say it 100%. And there's still empathetic ground to be like, oh, you didn't quite say that right. This is maybe what I wish you would have said, but I get your intention is to actually build a bridge of relationship.
The intention is really important. I mean, I think that unconsciously couples will hurt each other a lot and not mean it. And I think that to circle back to your original question, what makes a healthy relationship? I think it's knowing that even when your feelings are hurt, it's knowing in your heart and in your soul that your partner did not intend to hurt you. I think that's a really big part of healthy relationship. It's having that faith and trust in them that they didn't mean to. And I'm not talking about betrayal. I'm just talking about like hurt feelings.
Yeah, the micro cuts that they're doing their best sorting out what it is to be a gently used human and just not having all the capacity, skills, or
whatever. Acted unconscious in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really beautiful offering to be like, I might have a response to their action, but that wasn't their intention for me to have this ache. And my ache is probably related to something historically before they even showed up in the picture of my life.
Yes, yes. And I think, you know, you asked earlier, does this take time to build? It does. I think the first couple years of a relationship is actually quite fragile. And I think arriving to the place, God willing, if you do arrive to this place where you can say with certainty, I know that my partner, my spouse, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, I know that they would never do anything to intentionally harm me. Like to really know that takes years for most people. You know, I think it's not so much the timeline as it's just like you've been through stuff together. And I think that that's that's priceless.
It's empowering. I just want to say, like, I've been in the scenario even recently where this is both in friendships and in partnerships where someone was very volatile and spewing things out. And I just sat there going, oh, wow, they're really having a lot of internal ache right now. And like, I could hear the cruel words coming at me. And I was like, it's not their intention long-term to feel this way about me or to even think this way about me. This is a momentary cacophony of feelings and history and all these things coming up in this volcanic eruption that's just dramatic. And to just sit there and be like, hear it, but also observe what's underneath the hood of it. So empowering.
It really is. 100%. I could not agree with you more on that.
So I want to talk about one more subject, and then I want to transition to some questions some people wrote in.
Oh, great. Does that sound good? Let's do that. Let's do it.
So we talked about relationships, but as we know, in the seasons of love, that there are also heartbreaks and breakups. And one thing you talk a lot about is that a breakup can destroy you or it can transform you. And I would love to just hear, like, is transformation the ideal? And if so, how do we get there?
Oh, yeah, this is my thing. You know, not every breakup is created equal. You know, some breakups hurt, but some bring us to our knees and are traumatic and an emotional catastrophe. Divorces are, you know, 9 times out of 10, an emotional catastrophe. Sometimes it's a breakup with someone who you've been with for just a short period of time, and it's an emotional catastrophe because what usually happens in that grieving is that it's like it unearths all this old pain. It's like all of a sudden you're crying for like the dad that you never had or the mom that you never had, or you're crying because now you are a certain age and you're like the fear of like always being alone, or you don't think that you'll ever have a family. So they're an emotional catastrophe because you're not just losing someone who your entire nervous system has adapted to, but you are also breaking up with a dream and you're breaking up with an identity, which is now I'm going to be a single person, or now I'm going to be a divorced person. And I'm no longer someone's spouse. I'm no longer someone's partner. And so it's very catastrophic. But I do believe that those kind of breakups, and I know that people don't want to hear it, but there is a lot to learn. And I do believe that the purpose of a breakup like that, like I don't believe that it's just this meaningless random thing that's meant to destroy you. It's actually meant to force you to look in the mirror. Not everyone's going to do that. Some people are going to be destroyed by it and stay destroyed, where it's years go by and they can't let go. And then there are others who are going to say, okay, like, what is my role in this? For some people, how has my low self-esteem got me into this pickle? What are some of the things that happened to me in childhood that this keeps happening? I'm a real shit and I need to figure myself out so that I'm not a real shit in a relationship, whatever it is. And so you can either, everyone is going to feel victimized in the beginning of a relationship. And I think that's appropriate, but you can either stay feeling that way, or you can say, I feel terrible, but I need to figure some things out. There is always an opportunity before someone to truly transform when they have been brought to their knees from a breakup. And it begins with looking in the mirror and looking at some hard realities about the choices that you make, about how you show up in relationships, about the skills that you need to learn. And you either are going to agree and decide to be a student of that experience, or you're going to continue to resist it and feel victimized by it. And so there's always that choice.
And likely repeat it.
Yeah, well, you will repeat it if you don't reflect. There's no question. And then your story becomes, no one ever loves me. Nothing ever good happens to me. I'm not good at relationship. It's my mother's fault. It's my father's fault. All this stuff. And the thing is that the truth is there's validity to all of those feelings and there's validity to all of that story, but it's really not actually the truth. The truth is that you do have agency over your life. And the truth is that you have to change some things. And if you don't change, you're just going to like fall in love with someone else who is like your ex, but in a different, you know, suit.
Yeah. Different skin suit.
Different skin suit. Exactly. Maybe even a little slightly different personality, but their shit is the same as your ex's shit.
This show is also brought to you by the absolutely stunning and powerful tools for transformation that are created by Omala. Oof, even the name Omala transports you to a place of flow and vitality. These are some of my favorite products ever, like an amazing color-changing yoga mat that responds to your temperature and presence and reflects back your posture in real time. They have this incredible smelling skin balm candle that heats up to activate all the essential oils and vitamins that your skin has been craving for. I mean, look, if I could live in a giant bath of this candle, I would 100% do it. They also have these journals that lead you into a profound insight, and then you can plant those journals to create a stunning flower garden. I mean, damn. If that's not both deep and inventive, I don't know what is. If you're someone who desires to live in a luxurious flow of life and who believes in transformative wellness, then you have to check out Omala. Omala is giving my listeners an exclusive discount to treat yourself to something that is as special as you, boo. All you have to do is go to omala.com, that's omala.com. Use the discount code DrScott10 at checkout. And a portion of every purchase goes to an incredible charity. You got this. I think back on two particular breakups that I would say destroyed me, like couldn't get out of bed type of.
Yeah, and you might initially be destroyed. Everyone's going to be.
Let's normalize the out of that.
Yeah.
And I love what you said, like the synchronization of your nervous systems and then the process of desynchronizing is painful. It's destabilizing.
It's withdrawal. You go through withdrawal. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. All of a sudden you're like, you know, sleeping alone in your bed, and it's very, very destabilizing. But then I tell people, just give it a few months or maybe give it a year, and then you're not going to want someone to sleep over again. You're going to love your bed so much, you know, but
you're going to love it.
Yeah. It's very destabilizing.
It's very destabilizing. And that was my experience in two particular relationships that I had, but I would not take that back because the transformation that came out of those particular moments, I feel so much less burdened in my life because of what got revealed next, what the deep like shattering that occurred that allowed for something else to grow much healthier in its place.
Wow. Well, yeah. It's major. I think it's just about the meaning that we give it. I think ultimately it's like looking back and saying, I wouldn't want to do that all over again, though I know the purpose that it served, and it was a necessary purpose.
So necessary. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, its growth often comes out of friction.
Yeah, they don't call it growing pains for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this idea, the catalyst of like where a caterpillar turns into a butterfly.
Yeah.
That in no way can be a luxurious fucking experience for that caterpillar.
Not at all.
No.
Not at
all. Literally breaking open.
Yeah. You're breaking open. 100%.
You're literally breaking open. 100%. That's fucking painful.
It is.
So pain is part of evolution.
It very, very much is. And so is joy. Because you can't know joy without the pain.
Yeah, absolutely. So are we ready for some Q&A time?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do this. This is the first one from Anne. She said, I don't feel the spark, but he's great. Has so many things I want and need in a partner. Uh-oh, now what?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the things I would want to know is how long she's been dating him. So here's the thing. More paradox is coming. So the spark is overrated.
So much.
It's overrated. However, you have to be physically attracted to someone if you're going to have sex with them. You know, you have to have that. And sometimes you'll meet a really great person and you'll want so badly to be attracted to them and you're just not. And that's just how the cookie crumbles. But for people who are spark addicted and they are always choosing people based on spark and then end up in these really unhealthy situations, my advice to that person in particular would be you need to habituate yourself to someone who's actually very available and tap into your own vulnerability, which usually is very, very scary for the person who's always going for the spark, because usually they're always going for the unavailable person because they themselves don't actually see themselves as worthy of being loved. So they are actually very concealing of their vulnerability as well. And here's a thing that happens. And here's another important truth. There are circumstances where spark develops as you get to know someone more. And as you start to be vulnerable with them and they're vulnerable with you, I mean, there are people who start off as friends and then next thing they know, they're like, they get married and they're like, we weren't really that into each other in the beginning. So that does exist. So I would say if there's no spark, but they have everything that you've been looking for, I would say give it some time, unless when you look at them or you smell them, you're repulsed. Because then if that's the case, no, seriously, if you're really repelled, then you know what, like it's not going to change. But if you're not repelled and you're like maybe lukewarm about them, because I would say give it a chance, especially if they're really great. And especially if your pattern is to only go for spark.
Yeah, I can so concur. That's great advice.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause like, damn, maybe you're chasing the trauma tingles.
I know. I love that term, the trauma tingles. That's so good. Did you come up with that?
Inkem and Defo did.
Who?
My friend of mine, Inkem and Defo. We did.
You need to make merch about that. You have to create.
Oh, we got merch coming.
Okay. Yeah, okay. No,
we did
tingles. It. It's too freaking good. I wish I came up with it.
One of our first episodes on the show is about trauma tingles.
Oh, it's so
I'll
good.
Send it to you.
It's so good.
So yeah, so it might be that like we don't always know what is embedded in what we're calling the spark. And that takes time to really even identify what that is for you.
Yeah. And I really think that maturity is saying, I have chemistry with this person. I just don't know yet how much of that chemistry is physical, but they're amazing. So I'm going to give it a little bit of time to see if that develops. And what I'm going to do with that time is I'm going to open up.
Yeah. And when that other person is doing the great things that you deem so like swell,
yeah,
that word, just, they're just swell.
Yeah.
You know, like how does that resonate and feel in your body?
Totally. Great.
Because maybe you got to recalibrate what spark is.
Yeah. So well said. So well said. Because maybe the spark is like, what I hate what's going on in social media right now is like, if there's a spark, it's trauma. Like, no, it could be for some people. For some people, it's not. Like, let's not pathologize it. But if the spark for you is an anxiety, then you might be getting some trauma tingles. And instead, like, can the spark be like, oh my God, I feel so relaxed around.
Yeah.
And I think
that's
a priority.
Yeah.
I want to feel really relaxed around someone who I plan to get naked with. Like that's really important.
So good. Yeah. Really re-identifying the spark as something like, they make me feel safe.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, could we imagine if
I
that was
chill around them? I feel like I can just like be whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
I can be myself.
I can be myself. So
that's a spark.
So underrated.
So underrated.
So freaking underrated.
So, and so sexy.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
I think so. We have similar taste now in our wisdom years.
Too bad you're not straight.
you know where I live. I would totally go on a date with you.
Oh my God.
Let's do it. We're going to go on a date and then we'll do an episode where we just like talk about our date.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. Few more questions. Oh, this is an interesting one. I'm meeting my partner's parents for the first time and have fear of not being accepted. So that's Mark.
Well, that's a very hard question to answer because is there a cultural difference? Is that why? Is there a socioeconomic difference? Like, I'd want to know why he doesn't feel comfortable being accepted, because I think that kind of context is necessary. But since we don't have that context, and I'm just throwing it out there so that people who are listening who maybe are coaches, that they, you know, recognize that like that kind of context is so important. I think that, so very generally, it's totally normal to get nervous. There are certain people who have a lot of confidence around parents, and there are people because they're confident enough in their social skills. And maybe he's nervous because they're very protective. Maybe his partner, whatever, maybe they're very protective of their partner. And so he's trying to make a good impression. So my advice would be up your social skills by being present, by being warm, by asking interesting questions, and keep remembering to breathe and just sort of relax. That's my general advice for that.
Yeah. I hear it. It's scary meeting a partner's parents or even friends.
Yeah. It's not something that makes me nervous. I think it's more like, yeah, it's more nerve-wracking for people who have social awkwardness or some sort of social anxiety, right?
Yeah.
So for sure. I think that it's just really about practicing warmth and presence and like asking interesting questions and trying to practice connecting with another human being with your warmth and with your presence.
Yeah. Like do a warm up, like a mock sort of situation.
I like that. Practice with your friends.
Practice with the friends. Yeah. Warm up before you get there. Yeah. And definitely check your confirmation bias at the fucking door. Like if you believe they're not going to like you, you will act in ways that will not only do that, but you will search out little tiny signs that will confirm your fear. And then it will just replicate your own anxiety.
So important. Absolutely true. Yes.
So leave it at the door.
Leave that shit at the door.
Leave that shit at the door. All right. Last question. And thank you all for like writing in for questions with Jillian. This is fun. I haven't been able to get over my ex, even though we broke up. Now, several people wrote that in. So I'm not just going to say it's Leslie and it's Kevin and it's, so it's like
Kevin
multiple people.
How long it's been since they broke up?
This one says 4 years. The other one says 4 weeks.
Well, 4 weeks, of course.
Lots of fours. Yeah.
4 weeks, you're not going to be over your ex. So you just have to sit with the discomfort of just feeling terrible for a little while longer. 4 years. You know, I just recently started a Substack called Love Weekly. It's my new newsletter. Mm. And actually, one of the things that I actually wrote for free was, you know, why can't I get over my ex? And it was a woman who couldn't get over her ex, and it was 4 years. And yeah. And so one of the things that I said was that typically when that happens is it's not about your ex anymore. It's about something missing in your life and you're stuck, you know, you're feeling a little stuck and there's something that needs to change in your life. Maybe it's you're feeling unfulfilled at work. Maybe you're feeling like you need new community. Maybe there's something going on personally, like a conflict in your family that needs to be resolved. So usually at that point, the ex becomes a metaphor. You know, maybe it means that you have to actually shake things up in your life and do things with your life so that you are more fulfilled, because usually it's not about the ex anymore. It's about something else. Would you agree?
Oh my God, 100%.
Yeah.
And it might be that you've pedestaled your ex. I mean, sometimes one of our survival strategies of a breakup is for us to take our own responsibility or to view them as something more than they were.
Yes.
Yeah, way more important or way more communicative. Or I don't know if this is actually true. So, but I remember when I was going through a big breakup and someone told me, you know, there's a Buddhist story. So I don't actually know if it's a Buddhist story, but they said, and it worked for me at the time. They're like, the story is start coming up with things that weren't great about them.
Yeah.
Focus on that. Like, like our tendency after breakups, if we're the one broken up with, especially
the rejection. Oh, the rejection. And then we fetishize them.
Yeah, we fetishize them. We put them on this pedestal. We create this hierarchy that they're somehow above us because they broke up with us.
Yes.
So there must be something wrong with us. Yes. So therefore they're better.
Yes.
Fuck that.
Yeah, no, fuck that is right.
Yeah.
It's an illusion. And we have, and then, you know, I think one of the things that I tell people when they go through a breakup is especially that kind of breakup when you're rejected and all that, you're going to go through a temporary insanity. And you really do go through a temporary insanity. And so your job is to keep reminding yourself that your thoughts are illusory, negative thoughts, and that you need to not trust them.
Yeah. You'll be plenty of time to regain trust of your internal instincts, of your sense of self. But at the beginning,
you're going to feel like a crazy person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's part of the dysregulation that comes from deregulating yourself from someone.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Jillian, I cannot wait for our date and for the next podcast we do that talks about how well we did at our date and all of our communication, social skills we enacted and actualized. And I love you so much. Thank you for being on the Gently Used Human.
Oh, thank you so much for your kind words. And this was such a fun, great conversation. I just love the work that you're doing in the world. So I'm grateful to be here.
Thank you. And where can all these gently used humans find more of you and connect with you?
Well, my podcast, Jillian on Love, my Instagram at Jillian Turecki. I'm basically on all the social media, but those are the two main things. And then my website, JillianTurecki.com. And I have a membership for women and a course for heartbreak and all of that. So basically know my first and last name and you will find me.
And we'll put it in the show notes, everyone, so you can go find Jillian and grow and evolve and feel supported as you're doing it with her. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jillian. We love you lots. And thank you all for listening to Jillian and me on the Gently Used Human. Thank you for listening to the Gently Used Human podcast with Dr. Scott Lyons and friends. Visit gentlyused.com for fun extras, including submitting your questions for advice from a Midwestern mom. And don't forget to spill the tea and gossip about the show with all your friends and frenemies. And show some love by giving us 5 stars and leaving a review in your favorite apps. This helps us connect with all the other gently used humans out there. Oh, and by the way, you look fierce today.